Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion. This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, and I'm Zeph. And this is one of those occasions when I'm alone in the new basement studios by the lake. Now, fans of Eric, he is, for this episode, indisposed. Now, don't fear. I know that sounds somewhat suspicious, ominous even. Don't worry. He's just off. Not off like spoilt milk off. Just off as in too lazy to come down here to the basement. Anyway, we're soon going to be releasing a series of shows where we're going to rank TV theme tunes from through the decades. We're going to play some tunes and then give our opinions slash rankings to decide what we think is the greatest TV theme tune of all time. So if you're listening to this episode and you've got some thoughts of your own, please email us or tweet us or however you want to contact us. Let us know what you think some of the greatest TV theme tunes of all time are. Anyway, with us using this time to prepare, and I say us because, you know, it's not just the other fella that actually prepares. We decided to whet your appetite with this one-off special. Now, long-time listeners will know that the Atlantic Voice website is home not just to my partner and I, but also to some other shows. Austin Outer Limits is a new one. And I also do some stuff for Zone 1 Radio back in London, a show called The Email from America, an edited version you can now start finding on our website. Last year for The Email, one of my assignments was to profile Lalo Schifrin, a jazz composer and scorer of film music. Now, if that name doesn't mean much to you, let me just list some of the films that he's composed the music for. Dirty Harry, Magnum Force, Sudden Impact, Bullet, Cool Hand Luke, Enter the Dragon, Kelly's Heroes, The Eagle Has Landed, Rush Hour 1, 2, and 3. So, that's Eastwood, McQueen, Lee, Newman, Kane, Chan. That's some high-powered Hollywood heroes, if you will. He's also done a whole load of TV theme tunes, including Mannix, one version of the Starsky and Hutch theme, and this. That's right, the Mission Impossible theme is a creation of Mr. Lalo Schifrin. Now, this version you can hear in the background, it's actually the movie version from the Tom Cruise films. It was redone by Danny Elfman, himself the composer of The Simpsons, and more recently, American Hustle and 50 Shades of Grey. It's a classic, isn't it? Anyway, back to Mr. Schifrin. He's in his 80s now, and when I spoke to him last year, I was on the phone to his Southern California home. Now, it's clear instantly that I was a fan rather than an interviewer. But cut through that, and Mr. Schifrin's thick Argentinian accent, and you will hear the life story of a man who has mixed with the greats of music and screen, and on his way to becoming an icon himself. Every so often, you'll hear a few seconds of some of my own favorite Schifrin tunes, and if you like TV and film, I suspect there'll be one or two notes that you'll recognize. So, meet Lalo Schifrin.
My first training, and my first influence, it was classical. I was born in Argentina. I'm sorry, don't take this wrong, because I have nothing to do with the Falkland Island War.
Oh, no.
On the contrary, I was against the fascist government of Argentina that did exactly what Hitler did with Europe.
Yes.
So I was born in Argentina, and my father was the concertmaster of the Philharmonic Orchestra of Buenos Aires. And he had been a concertmaster for until the end of his life. And he trained me in classical music. He played also chamber music, and he was a good friend of Enrique Barenboim, the father of Daniel Barenboim. So Enrique Barenboim was my first piano teacher, and piano is my instrument. So as time was going by, and I love classical music, and I went to concerts and operas, you know, you have to realize that great conductors were coming to Buenos Aires. When I was a child, Arturo Toscanini from Italy came every year there. And all the great conductors. Nevertheless, I went to college and I started to have other curiosities for different kind of music, including jazz.
Yes.
And then jazz became very important in my development, because I had studied composition, and I realized that jazz was theme and variations.
Okay.
And the variations were improvised. So that was very important to me. So I decided to continue my studies of composition. I got a scholarship at the Paris Conservatory. I've been in Paris for 3 years. And in Paris also I developed my jazz playing, because there were just jazz clubs, and I like the freedom of jazz, or the so-called freedom.
Yes.
It's not that free as we think, because there are certain things that you cannot do. Anyway, after being in Paris, studying the conservatoire on one hand, and also playing jazz in the night clubs, the jazz clubs, like the Club Saint Germain, with great jazz, European jazz musicians. It was no different from what was going on in the club in London. What was the name of the club?
Okay. Oh, I don't even know if it's still there. There was
no. It probably is not. It was in the Soho.
Yeah. Oh, Ronnie Scott's, perhaps.
Ronnie Scott.
Yes.
Yeah. It was those kind of clubs.
Okay.
In Paris. And I played with them. So when I went back to Argentina, you know, I decided, I put together a big band.
Okay.
It was my own big band. I wrote all the arrangements, and I created a big repertoire. So the coincidence is that 6 months later, I arrived in March of 1956 to Argentina, back from France. In September of 56, Dizzy Gillespie came. It's the first time American orchestra came invited to Argentina. And it was a real big band, great. I mean, with great stars, like Quincy Jones was trumpet in the orchestra, one of the trumpet players. Phil Woods was alto saxophone. It was an amazing band.
So a young Lalo Schifrin is plying his trade as a jazz musician, playing with his band, not giving up on his classical training, seeing the world at a time when seeing the world was a far greater feat than now. Chet Baker, Count Basie, Quincy Jones and Dizzy Gillespie, he's mixing and meeting with the very best of them, and soon he's about to attain that status for himself.
There were many Americans, including Dizzy Gillespie, who came to Paris where I was in Paris.
Okay.
Chet Baker came to Paris, and he liked my playing so much that he wanted to take me on his group.
Wow.
Because his pianist passed away during the tour. and he liked my playing, and he invited me. But I decided not. I decided to continue my studies in the conservatoire and finish, which was. I didn't know I was doing the right thing, but I ended up playing with a trumpet player as known as he was, and you know, and I became part of his band. So I made that decision, and I'm not sorry about it.
No,
I'm not sorry. So there were. I met jazz musicians, Americans, and especially American jazz musicians that came to Paris to give concerts. But one thing that the visit of Dizzy Gillespie's band was gave me a lot of confidence and supported my position with the members of my own band. Because my repertoire, it was very similar. We were not playing the same tunes. We were playing mostly of my original compositions, but the style of my band was very similar between Dizzy and Basie. It's a big band. I don't know if I was moving forward, but at least I was defending my position.
Okay.
You know, I was staying in the same place, but I didn't know that. I you're right. I was moving forward.
Yeah.
But I didn't know at that time that I was moving forward.
Wow.
And the situation was such that one night during the Dizzy played for 1 week in the same theater with the band, with his band.
Yeah.
In a very important theater in Buenos Aires. And I went to all the sessions, including matinees. I left everything out. I didn't do anything except attending the concerts, his concerts.
Yeah.
So, all of a sudden, they organized a tribute, a recital. To Dizzy, his musicians, and his wife. It was in a Buenos Aires nightclub, very, very elegant nightclub. The owners were, you know, it was one of the most popular nightclubs, but very distinguished.
It was the center for so much. It was like a cultural center. It attracted everyone.
Kind of culture,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So they asked me if I would play, and I asked the musicians of my band, because we were not being paid for that. And I said, would you like to play for this? Yeah, let's go. So I made a program for like 1 hour. We played for them. And they were so impressed that Dizzy came to the bandstand and says, who wrote these charts? I did. He said, would you like to come to the United States? And I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was like that. I mean,
yeah.
All of a sudden, so I came to the United States, and the history is first New York with him, for 5 years, and then I came to Hollywood, and I stayed here and sing then.
Thank you.
It's Dizzy Gillespie, so impressed by Lalo's work that he asks him to perform with him in New York, and from there introduces him to Hollywood and the film industry. It is the perfect place for Lalo.
I am a movie goer, film fan. I've been watching movies always. I listen to the composer's styles in movies, and I thought that some of them were old-fashioned.
Very traditional, yes.
Yeah, they were not only traditional, but really old-fashioned.
Yeah.
Very good musicians, which I respect, but on the other hand, they were very, very demodé.
Yeah.
They were using clichés of classical music or symphonic music. I shouldn't say this because last year they gave me an award in Vienna, the Max Steiner Award.
Okay.
And Max Steiner is one of the composers I'm talking about.
Yes.
But I had to accept it because they were very nice. And I have the award right next to me.
In California, Lalo meets contemporaries such as Jerry Goldsmith, Planet of the Apes, Chinatown, Alien, the Rambo series, and John Williams, Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and of course Star Wars. But they find that the old guard of film scorers, composing very classical music for cinema, are not enthused by this new breed and their more modern take. The studios, too, have their doubts.
Yeah, that's because I reacted against that and I tried to put my own imprint.
Yeah.
And I did. I mean, luckily also, there's an element of luck. The fact that the producers and directors in Hollywood films started to look for new sounds in composition.
Yeah.
And some of them like jazz. A new generation of composers came. My colleagues and contemporaries, like John Williams, Jerry Goldsmith.
Jerry Goldsmith, yes.
Yeah, they were fantastic. And we became friends and we created a different kind of style. We were trying just to make a living.
Okay.
And you know, it was not easy because the studios were quite conservative.
Yeah.
And they had composers. Let me put it this way. Movies are an art form that is very expensive.
Yes.
It's the most expensive art form, I think, days. And at that time, the studio wanted composers who were really, for instance, Bernard Herrmann. Wrote all the movies for Hitchcock.
He worked with Hitchcock, that's correct.
Good.
Yeah.
Eh?
Yes, North by Northwest is a very, everyone knows that school.
He was older than me, much older than me, and he didn't like anybody. You're talking about my contemporaries and my colleagues, he didn't like them.
So there was rivalry there between the new guard, perhaps. And the old established, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So it was difficult to fight against them because the studios already, they had proven to the studios that they were bankable.
Okay.
They would do a score for a movie in 4 to 6 weeks, or television show in 1 week, and they wouldn't spend too much money. There were certain parameters that they would be passed. So the studios trusted them. I didn't trust us.
Because they felt you might be at risk as a new style.
No, they didn't trust us. They didn't know how much we were going to spend.
Oh.
I was telling you that films are the most expensive.
Yes.
That's the main thing. They didn't care too much about anything else. Basically, that's what happened. Until we became the establishment.
Modern soundtracks are full of the latest songs. The Rush Hour series of films, a perfect example. Sometimes tracks are heard for just a millisecond. It does feel like a recent trend, but according to Lalo, this has always been the case in Hollywood.
There were songs even at that time.
Oh, really?
Of course.
Yeah.
There were songs, the songs by Henry Mancini and Burt Bacharach. There were songs always.
Yes.
And songs, you know why they prefer songs? The studios prefer the songs because they can promote the film.
Yeah.
Through radio playing. If you can have a song played on the radio and that helps with your film, it's going to be much, much interesting for the producers and the studios. So that's what has been happening for a long time.
Cincinnati, a kid with no age in the hole, on a hot poker pot, Cincinnati had staked his heart and soul. Played night and day like a demon, and prayed for that one.
Lalo has scored the films of Hollywood's coolest stars, Newman, McQueen, Eastwood, all actors with that indefinable essence that lasts beyond their own lifetimes. But it's only fair to say that just a little of their on-screen persona was due to Schifrin's music. Eastwood's magnum-toting Dirty Harry, McQueen barreling his Ford Mustang across San Francisco, the messianic Newman in Cool Hand Luke. Just a little of their cool is thanks to the jazz man from Buenos Aires.
The fact that I was into classical music and jazz, those things helped me.
Yeah.
But I was lucky in the sense that some of my first movies, they were the producers and actors and directors were very influential, like Clint Eastwood and Steve McQueen.
Yes.
Or their producers. When I did Bullet, Dirty Harry, that was very much just influenced, and people liked it. Yeah, people liked it. And I, that means I was very lucky.
Do you have personal favorites when you look at your career?
Yeah, I do. Cool Hand Luke with Paul Newman. It was a very, very difficult score, and it had a lot of dimensions. Not only the country, but also the tragedy. There were comedies. There were all kinds of styles in that movie. So probably that's my favorite one.
Really? Really? It is amazing. When I look at your resume, over 200 films and TV shows, and it is incredible the sort of the mark that you have made on Hollywood.
Well, thank you very much. I feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, no, it is incredible to think how iconic your work has been, in that there are I can hum a tune And people may not know who wrote it, but they know that tune and it's in their memory. And that must be, for you as an artist, you know, looking at the whole, your whole career starting in Argentina and what have you, that must, it must be a nice achievement for you to look at your career. And you are, you're still working now, yes?
Well, you know, I don't know how to explain that. As I said, there was an Argentinian writer, you know, you heard of Borges, Jorge Luis Borges. Oh, he's a great poet. I recommend you that. He's there now, but I recommend you read his books. They're universal books. They're not about Argentina. They're about everything. Like if you read Shakespeare, it's really that good.
Yeah.
And his name is Borges, B-O-R-G-E-S. And he said, luck and destiny are synonymous. He said that luck and destiny are synonymous. Think about it.
Yeah.
And that happened with me.
All of us who love the movies, we've been very lucky that you have been a big part of, a huge part of the movie experience for us, with the sounds and the style that you have brought, you know, to cinema. Do you sometimes think, in a strange way, is it sad sometimes that, like, someone like me, when I read your name, I think of the movies? Do you sometimes feel, oh, I wish people knew me for all my work away from cinema? Are you happy with the fact that it is another way for people to get to know your musical sound?
Well, I really appreciate what you're saying.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it, and I thank you very much.
No.
What can I say? I mean, I cannot add anything to what you said.
No.
You made my day.
Oh, well, no, Mr. Shiffrin, you have made my day, and all our listeners back in London for Zone One Radio. I really appreciate you giving up some of your time to talk to us. And
no, it's a pleasure.
I just like I say, your music brings so many memories and joy to so many people, and I, as a fan, I thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. Shiffrin.
Thank you very much, and good luck to you.
They say you should never meet your heroes. You know, I've been accused of being sycophantic in some of my interviews here on the Email from America. This week, if that's true, then I really couldn't care. We've just heard a fraction of Lalo Schifrin's film music, some of my favourites, to be honest, and this week's show sums up for me what this whole Zone 1 experience is about. I got to chat to one of my heroes. Is he a hero because he's made great music? Because he's worked with some of the legends of entertainment? No, he's a hero because he's a gentleman. He was humble enough to thank me to be slightly embarrassed by my fanboy attention. Don't thank me, Mr. Shiffrin. On behalf of all of us, thank you for providing the sounds that accompany our memories. We're going to finish with two tracks from Cool Hand Luke, Mr. Shiffrin's self-confessed favorite. Paul Newman was nominated for an Oscar as Best Actor in Cool Hand Luke, and Lalo Schifrin was nominated as Best Soundtrack. Neither man won a gold statue. In both cases, the Academy got it wrong. There you go, legend of sound and screen, Lalo Schifrin. Now, longtime listeners of the Atlantic Voice podcast know that Eric and I are big film fans. So to get to talk to someone whose career has been responsible for so many personal memories, it was a thrill,
and just a little surreal. On our space travel show, remember the one back in November where Eric and I decided what the best movie spaceships were? My partner compared Han Solo's Millennium Falcon from Star Wars to Steve McQueen's Ford Mustang that he drove in the cop thriller Bullet. And here I was, talking to the man who penned the music for that famous car chase. I think what I'm saying is, there's no apologies from me for my open-mouth fanboy reaction to talking to Lalo. And anyway, when was the last time Eric or I apologized about anything? I'm going to finish this special edition of The Atlantic Voice the same way I finished the show that this interview originally appeared on, by playing Lalo Schifrin's most famous 60 seconds of music. Look out for our upcoming TV Tune special. I suspect this might feature somewhere. This has been The Atlantic Voice Podcast, and I'm Zeph. Take care. Just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for The Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.